Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Ord. We have a great show. We're going to talk about the potential of J.J. McCarthy with the 8th overall pick. Some of the standouts, particularly Georgia's own Ladd McConkey at the Senior Bowl and what his draft range might look like. We're also going to talk about an interesting video from Alex Anthopoulos, who talked about not adding jerks to the roster. And I thought this was absolutely fascinating. Can't wait to get into that. But we're going to start off with the idea, an idea that we've kind of thrown around, that the Falcons should double up on the quarterback position this offseason. ESPN has us doing that. Who are the two guys that ESPN suggests the Falcons go after this offseason to try to fix their biggest hole this offseason?
Yeah, ESPN went to, you know, the respective team beat writers. So this comes from Michael Rothstein. He has them signing Russell Wilson in free agency, and then he has them taking Bo Nix in the second round with their 74th overall pick. Let me give you some background on the article. Baker Mayfield and Kirk Cousins signed contract extensions with the Buccaneers and the Vikings, respectively. So, you know, considering those two guys are off the board, I don't know how much I hate the Russell Wilson thing, and I'll throw it back to you. This is the contract is what's really appealing. 3 years, $36 million. Only $20 million guaranteed, front-loading the contract. Obviously, that is a move in anticipation that potentially Bo Nix could be the starter in 2025 or 2026. You can move off Russ without, you know, limited financial ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it all along. I don't think Russell Wilson – I mean, listen, obviously we have our favorites. Some people like Justin Fields. Some people like a top-three quarterback in the class. But there's a very good chance that these kind of things don't come to fruition, and the Falcons have to go out and search for a stopgap option. And they could do a lot worse than Russell Wilson because, like you said, 3 years, $36 million for a guy that's been to multiple Super Bowls, won a Super Bowl, had a lot of success, wasn't even really that bad last year for the Denver Broncos. The contract is what's very appealing. So listen, if they have to go the stopgap options, it's not my favorite personally, but I don't think it's anybody's, and you might just have to do it. I like the idea of doubling up. I wouldn't even mind doubling up with the 8th overall pick if they really liked someone not named Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams. If they really like him, I don't mind it because he's probably going to have to sit behind him. Sitting behind a guy like Russell Wilson, you could do a lot worse worse than that. So we'll see what Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, and Terry Fontenot decide. But I do like the idea of doubling up on the position because you got to start throwing darts at this thing until something hits.
Yeah, the Raiders beat writer ended up, you know, forcing a trade with the Bears, a second and a seventh round pick for Justin Fields. Now, personally, I would do something like that. Everything this offseason about the quarterback position is going to be met with polarizing opinions. Either you hate it, you love it. I've seen J.J. McCarthy is J.J. Ritter. And stuff like that. Falcons Twitter hates the idea of J.J. McCarthy. And I think that's going to be the opinion of Falcons social media all season long. It's never – nobody, not one situation other than maybe landing Caleb Williams is going to be met with resounding agreement. So I think that, you know, we can all respect people's opinions. And the fact of the matter is we're fans for a reason. We give our opinions, but we're not in a position to make the actual choice for a reason. Personally, this is all, I don't want to say disappointing, but I would be let down if the offseason netted Russell Wilson and Bo Nix. I'm getting my hopes up. You see the shirt. It's LSU. You know who I want. The reality is he's probably not going to be there. He's going to probably go third overall, Jaden Daniels, to the Patriots, who are, you know, in a position to draft a quarterback, you know, kind of hitting that reset button. Bye-bye, Bill Belichick. Hello, Gerard Mayo. I just don't know. Like, when we entered the offseason, Chase, I was very optimistic because it felt like, you know, the world was at Terry Fontenot's fingertips. And as we approach free agency in the draft, it's becoming very clear that the options might not be as abundant as they were, you know, say, the last couple weeks in the season.
Yeah, I mean, the most realistic option seems at this point like a trade for Justin Fields in terms of the future of the organization and the upside that is there. The top three quarterbacks, I mean, they're even if you go further down the board, there's a team like the Giants. They're probably looking. And then there's three or four teams behind the Falcons that would love to jump the Falcons and take their pick of the litter. Even if a guy like Jaden Daniels. So the fact that the Falcons are not most likely, almost certainly, and I know there's been some mock drafts suggesting this, going to be able to just sit there and land Jaden Daniels. There's just way too many teams right behind him. There's the Giants right in front of him. I'm sure Dabble would love to get his hands on a quarterback like Jaden Daniels if he fell to them at six. So the Falcons, if they're going to want one of those top three guys, if it's even plausible, are going to have to trade up. I don't mind Bo Nix in the second round, especially at pick 74. I mean, it's not the sexiest thing, but I mean, you're talking about a guy that some people probably consider a first-round pick, has plenty of experience, had a ton of success in Oregon. It's at least a little bit of a lottery ticket later in the draft. I'd probably rather have that than a guy like Michael Penix at that same spot. My personal preference, if you're going to, and I've said this before, and we're going to talk about him later, is J.J. McCarthy. I think he's a clear-cut fourth quarterback in this class, and I think that will kind of show itself as the process moves forward. But I don't even think, and we're going to talk about it. J.J. McCarthy going in the top 10, 15 picks would not shock me. I know a lot of Falcons fans hate to hear that, but it would not shock me one bit.
I'd be shocked if he went in the top 10, top 15. I would not be shocked. The hope is that the general public is much higher on somebody like Jaden Daniels than, say, other teams in the league are. And that way, you know, this happens all the time and it's happening with Michael Penix. Let me tell you right now, if Michael Penix goes in the first round, I will eat crow. He is not a first round quarterback. He's not even a second round quarterback, but will probably go in the second round because teams are desperate. The fact is maybe the general public might be higher on Jaden Daniels than, you know, the Patriots or like the Giants you mentioned, or some teams behind the Falcons, and the Falcons do somehow land with him at that eighth overall pick. That's a hope that, you know, we can all hope and do that. And I think that the opposite is true with J.J. McCarthy. I think the general public hates J.J. McCarthy, but the NFL is going to be higher on J.J. McCarthy than the general public because he's 20 years old. The Michigan offense didn't do him any favors, and I know we're going to get into this in more detail in a later a segment, but the fact is the NFL scouts prospects in a much different capacity than the fans do when we just watch games and we kind of, you know, bake our whole opinions on what we see on one screen, and it's not the all 22 screen. It's just what we're being shown by ESPN. So that's not how these NFL teams scout quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, with Jaden Daniels, you got to just hope that everybody in front of the Falcons just lost his 2023 tape and only looked at his 2022 tape, because that's the only way I see that happening. I mean, if you just look at the trends of the league and these mobile quarterbacks and stuff like that, and how much value is that's now what everybody wants. Just like everybody wants a Kyle Shanahan OC, everybody wants a mobile quarterback, a guy that can make plays off script. And if you go watch Jaden Daniels, not only is he so accurate down the field, he obviously can make plays off script just vertically down the field and with his legs. I would just be shocked. I think, and I've said this before, I wouldn't be shocked if Jaden Daniels goes number two overall. You're starting to see mocks and stuff suggest that. Maybe that's just people trying to mix up their mocks, but it wouldn't surprise me one bit, because I just think when you look at the progression, you look at his ability to stretch the field vertically with his arm and his accuracy down the field, and then you add in the fact that he's by far one of the most mobile quarterbacks that has ever entered the draft. That's extremely appealing to us for a reason.
Yeah, I love Jaden Daniels. I loved watching him. LSU completely wasted a Heisman season. Matt House and Brian Kelly completely wasted a Heisman season.
Shout out Jaguar, Matt House.
But you'll never catch me saying he's better than Drake May. Drake May is absolutely unbelievable. It's Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels.
You say that. Jaden Daniels goes number one overall. We're going to have a different conversation on this podcast. I'm just saying, you can bet it at 20-1. Not the worst bet in the world. Maybe someone doesn't like Caleb Williams and the way he's acted, you know, that little ego, that little arrogance. You know how these things just kind of pop up. Like, there's just going to be some little story. There's going to be so many little nuggets, and it's probably planted from teams behind the Bears, just trying to scare the Bears. Like, you sure you want this guy? You sure you want this guy? And the Bears, not necessarily known for always making the right decision.
Ryan Poles needs to just get out in front of the situation and trade Justin Fields, or at least make it known. Just make it known. Hey, come to me, Justin Fields. If they don't select Caleb Williams, it will be one of the most egregious mistakes in NFL history. In NFL history. Not just Bears franchise history. In NFL history.
Yeah. I mean, I do completely agree. I think Caleb Williams is the clear-cut number one, followed by Drake May and then Jaden Daniels. But you never know how these things work out. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about that potential fourth guy in the draft among quarterbacks, J.J. McCarthy. Pro Football Network just released a mock draft, and they had J.J. McCarthy going eighth to the Falcons. Now, I haven't seen this a ton recently, but I do imagine we are going to see it a lot leading up to the draft because I do think it's going to go quarterback, 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 like we just said in the last segment, which leaves you with the fourth best quarterback potentially being available at eighth. And when you're a team like the Falcons, and there's a lot of teams behind them, the Vikings, the even the Jets, maybe, if you want them to sit them behind Aaron Rodgers, the Raiders. There's a lot of teams right there.
Steelers.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams that are going to be looking for a quarterback. And he, I think, in my opinion, is going to establish himself above the rest. If the Falcons took J.J. McCarthy at eighth, Alex, what would your reaction be?
It wouldn't be good. It wouldn't be good. Initially, I would sit on it and kind of, you know, wrap my head around it and come across the other side and kind of just accept it, swallow the pill that basically they think this guy can be a franchise quarterback, and then just let it play out from there. What I think at that point doesn't even matter. We just have to, you know, kind of swallow the pill and hope he can be that franchise quarterback. You know, the reality is most quarterbacks are seen as being overdrafted at some point in time, other than the first and second guys. And then that was that weird year where the Bears traded up to get Mitchell Trubisky. But even when the Chiefs selected Patrick Mahomes, people were kind of scratching their head like, ugh. So no matter what, teams are going to have, you know, that PR backlash of like, oh, you drafted this guy with the eighth overall pick. In an ideal world, we get an eighth overall pick. We get, you know, a Dallas Turner. We get one of those two tackles. We get, you know, a Malik Nabers, Odunze, and then maybe trade back into the first round for a guy like J.J. McCarthy. That would be an ideal world where you still get that, you know, 4 years and a fifth-year option with the rookie quarterback while also still using that top 10 pick to kind of surround him with talent. That's an ideal world. But again, I think that would be an overdraft, but everything looks like an overdraft until you're right.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you think, I mean, you just named a few names, but if it goes 1, 2, 3, quarterback, 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 and this is a very good loaded first round of a draft class, the Falcons are going to be sitting pretty with the opportunity to take a blue chip prospect with the eighth overall pick. So, yes, but I think one interesting aspect is Zach Robinson and who his preference is, because I think he's going to have a big say in who the next quarterback in the Atlanta Falcons is, who we might like in the draft. There, you spoke about Patrick Mahomes, and it's funny because Zach Robinson, which I did not know this, used to work for Pro Football Focus, and he worked there when Patrick Mahomes was coming out of the draft. And the guys at PFF that were his colleagues were on a podcast talking about how Zach Robinson was in love with Patrick Mahomes. Like, he had Patrick Mahomes as like his top quarterback, way ahead of everybody else. Obviously, he looks like a genius. So you do have a guy that you probably can trust when evaluating this process a lot more than you can trust me or you. So if for some reason he loves J.J. McCarthy, I think you should almost get a little bit excited about it. I know it would be shocking, and this is why I don't think it's going to happen, because I don't think J.J. McCarthy's Patrick Mahomes. But I'm just saying, if he falls in love with one of these prospects enough to take him eighth overall, we should probably take his word for it, because he has a pretty damn good track record.
Yeah, I think that, you know, his predecessor got the benefit of the doubt, and it was the wrong decision to give Arthur Smith that kind of leeway when it came to choosing his quarterback. Most head coaches or just offensive-minded guys, whoever's in charge of the offense, is going to have a say in who the quarterback is. The Falcons just made the mistake of giving Arthur Smith pretty much autonomy when it came to the quarterback position, and ultimately it cost him his job. Zach Robinson, his track record kind of speaks for itself. Are you going to give him complete autonomy? Of course not, because he's not going to be here forever. But you still got to weigh his opinion, you know, considerably, given his track record, the Patrick Mahomes, his work in LA. Raheem Morris obviously trusts him. But when it comes to J.J. McCarthy specifically, I think that, you know, the national fan base, particularly the Falcons, just have the wrong idea of who J.J. McCarthy is and who he can be. You know, he is not going to be the Michigan J.J. McCarthy that we all saw this year and last year, a run dominant offense, you know, one that didn't necessarily set him up in terms of passing concepts to succeed. He's got a lot of athleticism. He's more athletic than Desmond Ridder, which a lot of people don't really give him credit for. He's got a live arm. It's not a great arm, but he's got a live arm, more than enough to get the job done. And listen, the most important thing, he's not 25 years old like Michael Penix. He's 20 years old. He's a ball of clay that can be cultivated into anything that Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris see fit. So I don't necessarily hate the idea of a prospect like J.J. McCarthy. In fact, I would put, you know, I said it in the past segment, and I'll repeat it again if you missed it. You know, it's Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jane Daniels. I'll have to reset here. And then it's J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix even further down than Jane Daniels. And then a lot further down, it's Michael Penix. Michael Penix has the best arm out of those three. But I think that you saw his flaws were just illuminated in that national championship. He's 24 years old or 25 years old. He's had several catastrophic knee injuries, and he's not exactly this picture perfect prospect that a lot of fans thought he was prior to the national championship. Me and Chase watch every single college football game known to man. Chase watches a little bit more late night than me, which is what all Washington's were for the most part. And we saw these flaws throughout the season. And you said it best. It feels like nobody really watched Michael Penix outside of those Oregon games and then against Texas. And it feels like everybody's like, oh, this guy's going to go in the top 10. This guy's barely a second-round pick. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes on day three. I really wouldn't.
But yeah, I think that's going to be the
Bo Nix. Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy are 20 years old. They're like 4 years
old. Bo Nix is old, too. Bo Nix is old as hell, too. He was at Auburn for like 4 years. He's like 23, 24, but so is Jaden Daniels. So I don't think it's all about age, but I do agree with J.J. McCarthy. I think he's the clear-cut fourth guy in this draft class, and I think you're right on the ball, Clay. I wouldn't hate it as much as some people, but eighth does feel like a reach. Coming up after the break, Alex Anthopoulos talks about not adding jerks to the Braves. Braves general manager Alex Anthopoulos was on 680 The Fan radio over the weekend at Braves Fest. And he was asked, there was a clip that I saw, and he was asked a very specific question about acquiring jerks. He's like, because they made a point. The Braves really don't have any jerks. They have a bunch of likable guys that seem to love each other, enjoy each other's time. And Alex Anthopoulos said that's 100% something that he takes into consideration. He even mentioned a scenario that happened at the trade deadline where he asked a former player, like, hey, what were your experiences like? And the former player came back with negative. He said he held the player that he asked in very high regard. He came back with a negative response. He knew, Alex Anthopoulos knew, that this said player they were going to trade for could help them win a World Series, but he didn't want to bring in an attitude, a personality that wasn't going to vibe in the clubhouse. And this is something that I've said a million times. This is something that the Braves have had an edge over other teams, 95% of other teams, because they genuinely like playing for each other. They love each other and stuff like that. You see it with another team like the Philadelphia Phillies. You've seen their success. It's because they enjoy playing with each other and they feel confident in one another. You bring in just one little sour guy, little sour grape, that could mess everything up. And it's just another aspect that Alex Anthopoulos has mastered since taking over as general manager of the Braves.
It's like people think that, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, you know, discovered the wheel or something. This is the same, you know, strategy that people take in business and all facets of life. If you're running a company, generally speaking, you want to have a good workplace environment. In sports, professional sports, college sports, they are no different. And Alex Anthopoulos has done this masterfully. He enables the coaches to do their job. He enables the training staff to do their job. Same with the front office. Same with the players. Hell, the vendors, everybody from top to bottom. He lets Terry McGuirk do his job. The fact is Alex Anthopoulos has created a culture where everybody from the most important person to the least important person wants to show up to work and do their absolute best. Everybody is tugging on the same rope. And yes, it seems like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't you do that? Well, a lot of teams don't do that, not just in baseball, but in football and basketball. It seems like it's not even thought about sometimes. We're just like, let's just build the most talented roster. No, we need to build a cohesive unit, because you see it all the time in football where the guys who want to win for each other generally do. That's kind of how it works. Though the most talented roster seems like they're going to win on paper, the guys who play for one another and show up, especially in baseball, you know, more than half the year, every single day, makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Anthopoulos even brought it up. He said, let me put myself in their shoes. He's like, what if some guy, Terry McGuirk, came up to me and said, hey, this is now your assistant GM. And I look at him and I'm like, wow, this guy's a jerk. I now hate showing up to work every day. So I try to put myself in their shoes. And it's exactly like you're talking. That's the business side of things. But it's the same thing in the clubhouse. And you want to talk about baseball and people that want to be like, oh, it doesn't really matter that much. Just one jerk. I'm telling you, it does. Go look at the New York Mets last year. A bunch of guys that didn't necessarily like each other. Go look at the San Diego Padres. Everyone's like, oh, the Padres just built this super team. All of a sudden, the middle of the season, they start going through a little bit of a rut, and everyone's pointing the fingers and pointing the blame game. I'm telling you, it matters. And then go look at the difference. Go look at the difference. You could say, oh, it's just because they were struggling. The Braves in 2021 were struggling. They could literally not get over 500, but everyone sat there and played for each other, knew that they were just one winning streak away from getting out of this rut, knew the division was still in their sights. And guess what? They win the division. They win the World Series. These kind of things are so vitally important over a 162-game season. And I would even go even further and say they're so vitally important in the playoffs too.
You know, it's kind of crazy that everybody wants to, you know, success is easy. Success is easy to deal with. You know, when you're doing good in any facet of life, it's not hard. It's your resilience when the cards are stacked against you and how you respond. And the greatest teams always respond in kind. No matter how many times they get knocked down, they get back up. The Braves are the perfect example of that, and it's because of the job Alex Anthopoulos has done, the kinds of characters he's brought in that mesh. You know, it's building a roster is one of the hardest things to do in any industry at all, building a championship roster, and the fact that Alex Anthopoulos has done so and made them perennial contenders for as long as he has, it doesn't get talked about enough. I know we talk about the Anthopoulos statue. I'm telling you, like, this isn't a joke anymore. We're like, well, he wins another World Series, he's going to get a statue. He deserves one at least.
Yeah, I mean, and he's got quite a long time now that he signed an extension through 2031 to win not just one World Series, multiple World Series. And we've talked about in baseball. I mean, go look at the Kansas City Chiefs. A couple weeks, four or five weeks ago, they were losing to the Raiders on Christmas Day, getting absolutely embarrassed in their home building, and everyone had already written them off. And they're just a cohesive unit, like you said. They get over the failure, and boom, no one doubted them. No one in that locker room after that game doubted that they could get to the Super Bowl. Andy Reid talked about it, and I'm sure he'll talk about it several times over the last several or over these next 2 weeks going up to the Super Bowl, how that was a good thing for him. It was a wake-up call. And you know, it really is an underrated, undervalued aspect of being a general manager. And it's just like, it seems like when you're just talking about Alex Anthopoulos checking boxes of what he's great at, this is just another thing that it's just checked. Like, he's great at everything. He's great at everything.
Yeah, and Braves fans can get, you know, if you're an Atlanta sports fan, you know just how terrible the other side of the fence can be. Look no further than the Atlanta Hawks. Feels like everybody hates to go to work for the Atlanta Hawks. And it shows.
Every single player. Travis Schlenk's like, I want out. Nate McMillan's like begging them to fire him. He's like, please fire me. I mean, it really
just goes
is.
To show.
There's enough talent on that Atlanta Hawks team. We've seen it to get, you know, at least to the first or second round of the playoffs and be a 5 or a 6 seed. But guess what? Everyone hates each other. I mean, you saw pointing the blame between John Collins and Trae Young. We've heard rumors about Trae Young not being that liked, hard to coach. Nate McMillan not wanting to show up to work. Travis Schlenk deciding to step down. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you go from the Eastern Conference Finals and in a short period with very little attrition to your roster, you're 8 games under 500. And that, I mean, it's a perfect example of the other end of the spectrum.
It's crazy. You don't have to look very far. All you got to do is look about 20 minutes south to Atlanta. It's pathetic, really, because like you said, the Hawks are talented, but it just goes to show where it starts. It doesn't start at Trae Young. It starts at the very top with the wrestlers. It starts with Terry McGuirk and Liberty Media to Alex Anthopoulos to the rest of the staff, to the training staff, to the coaching staff, to the roster. you've got a bad apple at the very top of the Hawks organization, and it's just trickle. It's a trickle-down effect, and you're seeing it. It's just a terrible, terribly run organization. I say it very often. Thank goodness for the Atlanta Braves, or us Atlanta sports fans outside of the Georgia Bulldogs would be absolutely miserable.
Well, speaking of those Georgia Bulldogs, we are going to talk about a Georgia Bulldog entering the NFL draft. Ladd McConkey at the first day of the Reese Senior Bowl really showed out. Where could he go in the draft? The Reese's Senior Bowl is taking place in Mobile, Alabama, and there's a couple standouts. One that I wanted to talk about in particular, because I know we have a lot of Georgia fans that watch this show. Two receivers, though, because the Falcons, if you look what the Falcons have on their depth chart behind their receivers, behind Drake London, it's literally nothing. So not only the Falcons need one receiver, they might have to go out in free agency and get a guy and draft one or two guys. So this is going to be a big emphasis of the offseason for the Falcons and both these guys, particularly the one from Georgia, Ladd McConkey, had a fantastic first day. I'm starting to think, you know, as this performance comes out, this week progresses, I think he was probably a day two pick. Maybe people were talking about the third round. I think now he's probably going to move up into the second round. And who knows? I mean, we've seen guys go at the end of the first round that not a lot of people expected. But I really think Ladd McConkey's a stud. He can run every route on the route tree. He's one of those guys that's like your safety blanket on third down that he was at Georgia. He didn't put up ridiculous numbers, but then again, he was dealing with injuries this entire season, only played in 8 games. I just really think he's going to be a guy that a lot of people are going to fall in love with throughout this entire process.
I'll go a step further. I absolutely guarantee you Ladd McConkey will be a second-round pick, and it's not out of the realm of possibilities that he sneaks, like you said, into the back of the first round. Not only is he way more athletic than a lot of people give him credit for in terms of speed, his ability to get in and out of breaks, his understanding of the game in terms of leverages and how he can leverage the cornerbacks, you know, if the cornerback's playing outside leverage, he knows how to get outside, even if that's the case. His understanding of the game is so much more advanced than, you know, his age and experience that, you know, if he finds himself in the right system, you know, the right system is always important because you need, if you're a wide receiver, you're very dependent on who the quarterback is, other than like Mike Evans, who's put up 1,000 yards regardless of who's throwing him the ball. And if Ladd McConkey somehow makes his way to Atlanta, you can absolutely expect Zach Robinson to use the hell out of him. He seems like a perfect fit for a Zach Robinson, Sean McVay type offense. Think Cooper Kupp, who can work in the slot. He can work out of motion. He can work on the boundary. He, like you said, run all the pretty much all of the route tree. And, you know, calling him even sneaky athletic might be an insult at this point. The guy, you know, and we're only saying that. Yeah, like the only reason people say that is because he's white. The guy is athletic regardless. And I think that, you know, a lot of Georgia fans know who Ladd McConkey is, but a lot of the country might not. And obviously a lot of Falcons fans are also Georgia fans, so they know who Ladd McConkey is. He's an absolute dog, no pun intended, but a lot of the country might not know exactly who Ladd McConkey is. They will know by the time the NFL draft rolls around.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia definitely threw the ball more this season. They threw the ball a bit more in Stetson Bennett's second season. And you saw Ladd McConkey have, you know, 800 yards and 10 touchdowns. He also rushed for 140 yards on 7 carries. I mean, when you talk about versatility, I mean, he can literally, quite literally do everything. Safety blanket, understanding of the game, athletic. I really don't see a reason why this guy shouldn't be taken at the end of the first round. That's my preference, or that's my belief, but you never know. This is a loaded receiver class. There's a lot of guys. The other guy I wanted to mention is Roman Wilson. He's kind of cut from the same cloth, a guy that really understood defenses well at Michigan. You saw him make some huge plays against Alabama that won them the game to get them to the national championship, where he made some more big plays. He had 800 yards receiving. It's not the sexiest numbers, but a lot of this is about situations. We talked about J.J. McCarthy and the offense that they ran at Michigan. There's not going to be a guy at Michigan that's going to catch for 1,000 yards over 12 games. It's just not going to happen. You go look at Nico Collins back. Michigan ran a very similar style of offense, you know, 3-4 years ago when Nico Collins was there. That guy's now has C.J. Stroud throwing him balls, and he looks like an absolute potential number one wide receiver.
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, the way fans kind of analyze the game and scout, self-scout, is much different than the way actual NFL teams do. They can compartmentalize what a guy's role was and what he did within that role, where a lot of fans just see J.J. McCarthy and they didn't throw the ball. In one of the games, I think it was Alabama, they didn't throw the ball at all in the second half, and they go, well, why didn't they do that? Well, the fact is Alabama wasn't stopping the run. So, obviously, why would you even –
Penn State. I think they threw it 8 times total. It's like
– Yeah, and Sherrone Moore was like, if they're not going to stop the run, then I'm not even going to put the ball in harm's way through the air. So the fact of the matter is similar to J.J. McCarthy, the same could be said for Roman Wilson and Ladbukaki, that basically these guys, they didn't even sniff their full potential in those respective situations. So the way we see it and the way that NFL teams actually see it is much different. And so, you know, it's hard for fans, especially fans of the teams we're scouting or rival teams, it's hard for us to compartmentalize what their roles were, what they did within those roles, and the potential of those players.
Yeah, I think what should excite Falcons fans, and if you haven't seen this Twitter video, there's a video when Sean McVay and Les Snead are drafting Puka Nacua in the draft room, and they're talking about oh my God, like they just fall in love with this process. This is a 5th-round pick. And it's like Sean McVay's like, oh, I already see his role. I already know what he's going to do it. That is what NFL teams are looking for and these strengths in this tape. It's like, oh, he does this really well. I need this in my offense. This is a guy we need to target. Obviously, you know what Puka Nacua went out and did as a rookie, broke the rookie record for receiving yards and looks like he's well on his way to being one of the best receivers in the league. So when you're talking about the Rams, you're talking about Zach Robinson, you hope similar conversations can be had in their green room and they recognize one of these guys, whether it's Roman Wilson, Ladd McConkey, or someone else, can come in and have an impact immediately in the offense.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about the Falcons pass-catching group, Ladd McConkey fits very well in terms of a complementary role, where Kyle Pitts, Drake London, big body guys. Kyle Pitts, we expect him to be a little bit more healthy, hopefully fully healthy, kind of reminiscent of that rookie year Kyle Pitts, and he can burn. Make no question about it. That was not who Kyle Pitts was this past year. He can burn. And you talk about Drake London being a big body, physical guy. All three of those guys kind of complement each other, and it's very enticing, especially in Zach Robinson's offense.
Yeah, I agree. Coming up after the break, former Atlanta Falcons head coach is heading to Pittsburgh. We're going to talk about the fit and what Steelers fans should be excited about. Arthur Smith has landed on his feet in Pittsburgh, becoming their offensive coordinator. And I think this is a very intriguing fit because I think he fits everything that Pittsburgh is and wants to be. He wants to pound the rock. He's going to come in there with that hard-nosed attitude. I think stylistically, this is a home run hire for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The only issue is he has a very similar problem that he faced with the Atlanta Falcons, and it's figuring out the quarterback position. And as we know all too well, it doesn't matter how good you run the ball. It doesn't matter how good you play defense. If you have a quarterback that cannot make plays. Now, I think Pittsburgh situation's a little bit better than Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke, but it's not by much. Still, I love the hire. I think they're going to have to figure out the quarterback position either way. Just don't let Arthur Smith do it. And I think they'll be fine.
Don't let Arthur Smith near your big board at all. And I think a lot of Falcons fans are like, ooh, sorry, George Pickens. Oh, sorry, Najee Harris. And the fact of the matter is Falcons fans are just getting in their feelings. The fact is Arthur Smith, the head coach, just like we didn't want Bill Belichick, the head coach, GM, yada, yada, yada. Arthur Smith, the head coach, wasn't good, but Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, is good. He didn't just coordinate those teams, those units in Tennessee by luck. I'll read some stats out. Listen, in 2019, third best rushing attack, 10th best scoring offense. In 2020, it was even better. They led the league in rushing and 4th best in points per game. That didn't just happen by mistake. Even in 2021 with Matt Ryan, they were above average in terms of offensive EPA. And then even with Marcus Mariota, they were even better in terms of offensive EPA. So the fact is Arthur Smith can still coordinate a good offense as long as he's got a reliable quarterback. And even then, he showed you with Marcus Mariota, he can still have an effective offense. Now, obviously, you want an efficient offense. You want an offense that you can rely upon all season long, all game long. And that comes down to, like Jace said, the quarterback position. Kenny Pickett, way better than Desmond Ridder. So if you're a Steelers fan and you kind of, you know, stumbled upon this video, you're in a much better situation already than the Falcons were last year. Desmond Ridder is not a starting caliber quarterback. Does Kenny Pickett need to improve upon certain things? Yes, but Matt Canada was not the guy to do it for Kenny Pickett. Me and Chase, LSU fans, we fired Matt Canada years ago because his offense didn't even work in the college ranks, and he somehow got a job on one of the most spectacularly run franchises in sports history in the Steelers. That didn't make any sense. The guy failed up. So if you think that Arthur Smith can kind of accentuate some of Kenny Pickett's strength, then you have reason to be optimistic. In my opinion, I wouldn't be satisfied. I would still try and upgrade the position. The Steelers have a roster right now ready to compete. Kenny Pickett, you need more out of him. If you're going to go in there with Kenny Pickett, it's got to be a do or die year, in my opinion, for Pickett.
Yeah, this past season, obviously, the big three in Atlanta didn't get involved. But if you go look at his seasons with Tennessee, A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, like those were two of the leading receivers and running back combos in the league. You go look at the first year, Kyle Pitts as a rookie nearly breaks the record for most receiving yards in a rookie season. You even look at Drake London. Yes, he hasn't turned into a superstar, but he's had some pretty damn good years. So I know everyone wants to get their jokes off about George Pickens not getting the ball. I guarantee you George Pickens is going to be just fine. And it's a better scenario than he had with Matt Canada, because you're spot on with the Matt Canada thing. I mean, Matt Canada left LSU, somehow got hired as the OC, failed in Louisiana. The very next year, with Ensminger and Joe Brady, they have the greatest offense of all time with most of the same pieces. Most of the same pieces. Yes, maybe they're a year older, but they had Joe Burrow. They had Jamar Chase. They had Justin Jefferson. They had all these cats.
Terrace Marshall, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The entire offensive line returned. It was the exact same offense.
And they ran, and they decided they needed to run I formation. I don't know if you watch too much less Miles clips, but go watch the 2018 LSU-Alabama game, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about Matt Canada.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Canada was a terrible hire in the first place, which is shocking because Mike Tomlin is so good at those sorts of things. I think that Steelers fans, if you don't love Arthur Smith yet, you will soon. He embodies Pittsburgh. He's going to fit so well in that city with that franchise and that team. They're going to be overjoyed by that hire, I promise.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Arthur Smith was a slam dunk hire. Falcons fans, get your jokes off because they won't be lasting for very long.
We could look like the joke soon.
When that's 12-5. Coming up after the break, who is the biggest Falcons celebrity compared to Taylor Swift? The Taylor Swift saga has taken over the universe. I mean, the entire world. Like, this is the biggest storyline in the world. She is the biggest pop star in the world. She's obviously dating Travis Kelce. They're going to the Super Bowl. She is by far probably the most famous you can possibly get on the entire planet. So definitely the Chiefs' most famous person. But I got to ask you, and I want to discuss this, got us thinking, who is the most famous Atlanta fan in the world?
So this whole question and idea stems from a CBS article who named kind of every team's most famous fans. And for us, it was Samuel L. Jackson, Usher, and Jimmy Carter. Now, and I think that the parameters of this question are important. Are we talking about right now, day and age? Because I guarantee you go ask a bunch of Georgians, young Georgians in Atlanta and around Atlanta, who Jimmy Carter is. They probably don't know who Jimmy Carter is. But if we're talking about the breadth of that person's lifetime, how well they were known at their peak and everything like that, I think Jimmy Carter's a great answer because the guy was the gosh dang president for at one point. You know, that's the most powerful position in the world. Surely he was known universally across the world. So, you know, if we're talking about at the height of their popularity, or at least how well known they were, I think it has to be Jimmy Carter. But right now, I don't even know. I guess Samuel L. Jackson's a good name.
Usher's performing at the Super Bowl. My biggest thing is how many of these people are actually, you know, Falcons, Braves, and Hawks fans? Because a lot of these guys, maybe they show up to a game because they're from Atlanta, and then I see them in Boston wearing a Patriots jersey while we're in the Super Bowl or something, and I'm like, yo, what the hell's going on, man? This is you're not. Hey, don't ever claim Atlanta anymore. So I don't know. I mean, Samuel L. Jackson obviously had the whole Falcons rise up when the Falcons were at the peak of their existence in 2016. So he's obviously a name. Usher performing at the Super Bowl, you got to say he's pretty famous. I mean, he's going to be performing.
Yeah, if you want to talk about, I think in terms of if you X, Y axis, in terms of fandom and popularity? Like, how big of fans are they actually? Samuel ain't talking about the Falcons anymore because we suck. It's probably ludicrous. Ludicrous is the biggest Falcons fans when we suck, when we're good. It is kind of funny. So, I mean, probably ludicrous or big boy.
I mean, I'm
big
sure you could go through the entire rap universe because that basically stems from Atlanta. I mean, you go Future, you go a million different directions because Atlanta owns the hip hop industry.
Nobody's so bigger than Taylor Swift, though, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, she's the most famous person on the planet. That's not even like a I don't think it's even close. I frankly don't even think it's close. She is by far the most famous. And shout out Taylor Swift, baby. Go Chiefs. That wraps up our show this evening. We'll be back with you tomorrow.